Hey, gang, do you find yourself listening to your music on one app and then listening to your podcast on another app? If you do, stop this insane behavior right now and download Spotify. Spotify is home to all of your favorite music and all of your favorite podcasts. Podcasts including Fly on the Wall, the Saturday Night Live podcast with Dana Carvey and David Spade, the Rock on Tours podcast with Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt, old favorites like Fresh Air, My Favorite Murder, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Look, if you're looking for a news podcast or sports or entertainment or true crime, look, if you're looking for a sewing podcast or an RV podcast, Spotify has all of this for you. That's Spotify. All of your favorite music and all of your favorite podcasts in one place. Find it in your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify, music and podcasts. Let's get down. Hey, gang, it's Johnny. I just want to take a second to talk to you guys about engagement. Right now, you're listening to the show, and I'm not sure exactly what platform you're listening to it on. But whatever platform you're listening to it on, you can subscribe to it and get an alert every time a new show drops, usually every Tuesday and every Friday. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Whatever platform you're listening on, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, any platform, you can subscribe to it. And if you can leave a comment, leave a star, share it on your social media, if it's something that you like, please do that. We encourage you to do that. And also, as far as social media goes, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram and Twitter. Give us a follow. Also, you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Please do. Anyway, all I want to say is, you like a show, share it, use the hashtag How Did I Get Here Pod. We'll give you a shout out. Thank you so much for listening to the show and engage.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. Gang, it is Tuesday, November 8th, 2022 here in America. If you're listening to the show the day it comes out, and that means that it is election day. The midterms are happening. This is a very tense day in America. This isn't a political show. It's a music show. But I do have to tell you, man, get out there. Have your voice heard. We've seen the lunacy that's been going on since, for a while. I don't even know when it started, but we didn't start the fire. It's always been burning since the world was turning, but things have gotten a little more insane. There's like this authoritarian election denying red wave of lunacy trying to take over this country. And I hope that we can stop it, nip it in the bud today and move on with healing this country and making it a great place. Okay. If you have not voted, get out there and do it. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, it's way too important. Way too important. Gang, I had a great weekend. I did. I had a really good weekend. I've been flying low. I've been a little depressed for a little while. My car, you know, my gas tank got fucked up, and then my car was in the shop for like 18 days. I didn't really do a lot in those 18 days. I went out and did some stuff, but like I didn't go out and have fun. I just kind of stayed in my house with Rosie the whole time. And this weekend, I decided to get out and just get out and mix it up with people. My friend 16 Deluxe were playing on Saturday over at the parlor here in Austin. So I went out there to see them. And lo and behold, not only ran into all the members of 16 Deluxe that I love so much, but also so many of our friends, Tony and Miles from Fastball, Paul Miner, Todd Wolfson, Scott Collins, Bill Davis, this lady Jane, who is really nice. All kinds of super cool people. It was so, so, so healing. And you forget, like, I don't need to be depressed if I have all these friends and I have, you know what I mean? Like, general depression can be cured if you're out doing stuff and being with people that you care about and care about you. And that's what I noticed. I was hanging out on Saturday with Miles Zuniga and Tony from Fastball, and they were like, hey, we're playing this gig tomorrow, a private show. You should come out to it. It's at this rich lady's house. It was really fun, man. They played, Guy Forsyth played. It was like a kegger with like red solo cups. You know, that's how you do it, man. It was great. Saw great friends on Saturday and Sunday. Went and saw a comedy show with my friend Jake on Sunday. That was really fun. Saw some local comics tearing it up. Some new people, none of them I'd ever seen before. So that was really exciting and fun. Some of them were very, very funny. So overall, great weekend. Today's election day. Get out there and vote. You know what I'm talking about. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. John Broder, who plays under the name Bird Streets, has just released his second record, Lagoon. It just came out on Friday. It's absolutely gorgeous, man. Fantastic. John is from Brooklyn. He lives in Brooklyn. Bird Streets is based in Brooklyn. They're going to be doing a show, I think, tonight. They're doing a record release show at Rockwood Music Hall in New York City. You can go to birdstreetsmusic.com for all of your Bird Streets needs. They will be releasing this record, Lagoon, on vinyl and CD. Bird Streets is like a power pop band. That's the kind of music I gravitate towards. My two favorite kinds of music are power pop and shoegazer music. So, and I love all music, but those are my two very favorite. You know, Needle Hits the Groove, the theme song from the show, that's a power pop song. You know that I love all these bands like Jellyfish and all this. Well, John Broder's like whole lineage goes through. The first Bird Streets record was made with Jason Faulkner from Jellyfish and The Grays, and who's played with Beck and Air and so many great bands. That record's great, but this record, Lagoon, is absolutely fantastic, man. This record is gorgeous. John went through a lot of stuff, obviously, like a lot of us have over the last few years. But he's entered sobriety. He split up from his wife. He got divorced. So this record, he deals with a lot of very heavy shit in a very eloquent and beautiful way. It's a record that has like a masterpiece vibe. Like all of the reviews are like, hey man, this record, you know, unbelievable. The song Sleeper Agent has been out for a little while. It's absolutely fantastic. There's a song on there called Burnout that you should listen to. And if you smoke weed, you'll start feeling a little bit guilty, like John's yelling at you about something. But man, John and I have such a great conversation. This record, Lagoon, has all kinds of really great guests on it. Has Amy Mann on it at Harcourt, John Davis from Super Drag, Jody Stevens from Big Star, was produced by Pat Sansoni, Michael Lockwood, who was just on the show from Lions and Ghosts, Zach Jones, and Oscar Albus Rodriguez. Oscar Rodriguez, baby. So all these guys produced this record. John and I have a great conversation about his songwriting, about how he came up in music, how he just growing up in Albany and got out of there, got to the big city, New York City. And also, like, to me, his music and his whole, like, scene reminds me of, like, the Largo scene in L.A. with, like, John Bryan, Jason Faulkner, all these great dudes. And that's kind of like the scene that he's in there with people like Amy Mann at Harcourt, all those great people, Michael Lockwood. Man, what a great, great, great record this is. I cannot tell you how great it is enough. It's so great. Lagoon, get out there and check it out. You're going to hear the song Sleeper Agent right now before I start talking to John. So without further ado, this is me and John Broder, who plays under the name Bird Streets. You can find them at birdstreetsmusic.com. All right? Enjoy our conversation. Let's get down.
I got to tell you, I'm kind of a mess. Live through the day just to get to the next. Can't return calls, never mind send a text. The monster inside, it don't get any rest. Stare into the hole that surrounds all of this.
Are you in New York?
I'm in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, baby.
Yeah. Grew up upstate New York.
Oh, yeah? Where?
In between like Saratoga and Albany.
Oh, nice.
The capital region. Yeah.
I like Albany, man.
It's got vibes.
Yeah.
I lived there for a long time, so my take on it is a little different, but I think if I was just swinging through, I'd have a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time. My swing through was a good time. I played some weird festival. In the day, yeah. There was a lot of people there.
Was it Lark Fest, maybe?
Or I don't know. It was like in the summer or something.
How long ago?
I don't know. 15 years ago.
Oh, okay. Might have been, or it could have been, there's also the Tulip Festival.
I didn't sound like that. It was like a downtown
thing. In the park. Oh, okay. Yeah, it probably was Lark Fest. They do a bunch of different things.
I interviewed Michael Lockwood a while back, and we were talking about his record label, and he was like, oh man, because we were talking about, you know, he was getting a vibe on what I dug musically. He was like, man, you're really going to dig this band Bird Streets that I'm working with. And man, I heard this record and it blew my mind. You are awesome.
Oh wow, thank you.
Yeah.
That's nice to hear.
There's like a very of the family tree of like Largo people, like John Bryan family tree of like power pop, guitar, piano playing brilliance.
Savants. Yeah. I mean, he might be the one guy from that world that isn't on this record.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, you got a lot of those cats on there.
He's a big get these days. and we didn't try. We got everybody else. Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, you know, Michael's of that scene. So this record was made in a lot of places, but, you know, the last stretch of it I made with Michael because we were sort of, you know, forced into hiding for a little while there.
Yeah.
Thanks to nature. And, you know, after a fair amount of wondering what I was going to do next, it was like, I guess I got to start some stuff. And we had cut one song before everything went dark. He and I, that isn't on this record, but it'll be on the next thing. So it was, you know, it made sense to kind of spark things back up with him because I felt comfortable working with him already. And it was like, let's, you know, help me push this thing to the finish line and let's get a few songs done remotely as they do now. And like that just led to, you know, him basically, I just kind of handed over the reins. I was like, you produce this thing. I'll just be the songwriter like I tried to do on this whole record. And that led to him being like, I'd get texts like, hey, I was thinking of asking Amy to play bass on this. I was like, of course, that's great. I've been an Amy Mann fan for, you know, most of my adult life. That would be amazing.
And yeah,
I don't know her well enough to ask that myself, but he, you know, he's been working with her and has been friends with her for 35 years. So it was like the circles, you know, sort of, bore fruit on this project.
Yeah.
He kept sending me more things like Buddy Judge, who sings on Harmony on Unkind, you know, if you're a fan of power pop in any way, you might know the Grays.
I know Buddy
and
Judge,
the Grays,
baby. Yeah. Yeah. You said
to pick up with a new
thing. You were starting your rant on Buddy Judge and the Grays.
Oh, wait, let's not say rant because it's.
Oh, no, not a opposite. Rant. Sorry. Not a rant. your monologue.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm just such a huge fan of his, you know, his writing from that and some other things he's done. And yeah, it was like, he's singing backing on my song. How fucking cool is that?
God, that's his awesome.
Voice. Yeah. There was a lot of those in the course of making, especially those songs. Ed Harcourt obviously was like a major, like, holy crap.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Another guy I've been a fan of his for 20 years and we know each other a little bit, but it was another thing that I wouldn't have thought of that necessarily, but Michael was like, it seems like it's up his alley, and it was so up his alley. It was perfect.
Totally. What song is he on? Tell me what songs people are on. What song is Amy on?
So Amy and Buddy Judge are on Unkind. Sleeper Agent has Ed Harcourt. And those two plus On Fire have Patrick Warren on the strings and the keyboards, who, if you're like a...
Oh, so Patrick did the strings on Sleeper Agent.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
The Wurlitzer. No, I mean, he's just such an amazing musician, and he's complimented so many records that I love and that you love and that everybody listening loves. You know, it's
a huge Chamberlain guy.
He was the guy, you know, that made the Chamberlain. Guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He kept it alive.
Yeah.
He kind of did. And I mean, through his work with Michael Penn, where he, you know, mostly played Chamberlain, and that was a big compliment to Michael's voice and guitar playing on all those records. So he's more a strings guy these days. He's doing a lot of film scoring like a lot of the smart musicians are, if they can get the work.
Those strings on Sleeper Agent are gorgeous, man.
I love what he did on that song.
Yeah.
That song, if you're a fan of minutia and assembly type stuff, was done in the strangest order because it was a whole different vibe. It was very much a power pop song when I wrote it. And then just before we started working on it, Michael and I, because I happened to be in California to work on that with him, and I was like, well, you know, why don't we take a different approach and cut it in half and do this other thing. excuse me. And so Patrick was one of the first people who got it after I did my demo, and it wasn't making a lot of sense. And I kind of went back and like did a couple of things differently on like the guide track, and then we added drums, and then we sent it to Ed, and like everything kind of fell in almost backwards. The piano was like the last thing added to it, which it seems so fundamental to the song, but it was just like this sort of building blocks process, but like sort of removing one thing and replacing it with something completely different that somehow fit. It was fun. It was fun.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Michael, when he came into it, it's like, that's just like the perfect person to like walk into these songs and help you finish them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. His whole vibe, his sound, his palette, you know, in terms of the, like the things that we agree on that we both like, just all suited this thing very well. You know, they were just right up his alley.
Yeah, totally. What about Jody Stevens? How'd you get that guy? That's pretty cool.
Jody, I love Jody. He's the coolest dude. I've known him a little bit for, I don't know, 12, 13 years. I met him at like a South by Southwest some many years ago.
Yeah, me too. We would stand there at the Arden booth with like this line of like fucking pop nerds. Just a bunch of fucking dudes in line with their, like waiting to get their picture taken with Jody.
But he's so happy to do, you know, he's kind of the guy, you know, he's the last man standing, so to speak, in that in that crew, in the big star crew. So, but he's happy to carry the torch. I think, you know, he still runs Arden day to day. So when it came to, you know, when Pat and I were getting ready to go to Memphis, I was like, well, first of all, Pat and I had done some sessions a year prior, but then we got together again just before the pandemic. And I was like, I want to work at Arden. I just would love to cut a couple songs there. And, and I think he was the first to bring it up. He's like, want to see if Jody will play it. I was like, well, I didn't want to say nothing, but yeah, that'd be great. And of course he's like, yeah, I'll fucking jump in on drums. That was a trip, man. He's just,
can I ask you a question? Did you get to record with him? Like at the same, like were you playing and he was playing and you guys were looking at each other?
that was the trip of it all, man. Like we were in, you know, like Pat was in the control room. I was in an ISO because I was singing. And then Jody and John Davis from Super Drag, all just playing at the same time, just working the songs out like we were, you know, a band in a garage.
God's making the hair on my arms stand up. That's the coolest, man.
There was several times when I just forgot where I was in a song because I was like, is this happening right now? Holy shit. Sorry if I'm cussing too much for your audience.
No, cuss away. I love John Davis. I did a show, and there's no way he'd remember it, like 22 years ago in like Vegas one night. And it was like this horrible, we were both on Elektra Records. And I think Super Drag was on Elektra because I remember our radio lady was super into them. And we were signed to this subsidiary of Elektra that was owned by Lars Ulrich from Metallica, but we weren't by any means that kind of band, right? So we had played this show, but I'd fucking puked on myself.
Like, oh, good.
Yeah, I'd had like a whole Vegas night the night before, and I vomited on myself on the way to the gig, and I had to wear this shirt that was one of our label girls had bought this David Cassidy t-shirt and it like didn't reach my pants. So I'm wearing like this little half shirt with David Cassidy on it. It's pretty awesome.
What band were you in?
I was in this band called Gowdy, my last name.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, anyway, you know, the guy that actually signed us, the A&R guy on that was the drummer of the Grays, Dan McCarroll.
Dan McCarroll, one of his early A&R jobs.
Yeah.
Now he's like president of Capitol or something.
Right. It was his first A&R job.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were the first thing he...
He's from
the Grays.
He's an Albany boy. He's from my neck of the woods, an Albany guy.
Yeah. So, all right. So in New York, do you play at like Rockwood and stuff like that? Where do you play up there?
We do. I don't do a ton of shows here because New York is a lot of work. I don't know. I don't like to overkill either. It's a lot to get a show together, as I'm finding literally today, as I got a text from my keyboard player today saying, I just tested positive for COVID.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, our show's on Monday. So you got me in the middle of one of the craziest brain days I have had in a while, where we are actively putting out, we were texting everybody we know who's ever touched a keyboard, being like, hey man, can you learn like 11 songs by Monday and, you know, all the sounds that go with them?
Cause oh yeah, shit.
You've heard the record.
Yeah.
Lots of keyboards on this record.
Yeah.
Lots.
Yeah.
It's a big gig. It's a big deal. And we're doing like primarily songs off this for the show. So it's a, we're in crisis mode right now over here at Burt Street's headquarters, but we'll sort it out. Anyway, we do it. Theoretically, we have a show this week at the Rockwood Music Hall, and that's kind of a, that and the Mercury Lounge have been our home bases here in New York.
Yeah, I love the Mercury Lounge.
You know, LA is, you know, we do the Hotel Cafe usually. They're very receptive to us and a really nice West Coast headquarters.
Are you going to full on tour for this? Is this?
You know, I want to. It's been real tough just getting the wheels turning that in that regard. Everybody's either touring as like their life depends on it or done with it right now. It's tough. Like there's a lot of people canceling shows, you know, but there's also like, it's just the whole industry is such a whack job right now. So yes, I want to get out there and tour. I'm going to find a way to do that. It may just be me and a, you know, and a piano player, Costello Naive style.
Yeah.
But, which is fucking great. If you, I'll do the songs work that way, you know, like I'll do it, you know, whatever it takes to get out there, but it's just, we're trying to find the right situation. And
when you said that, it just in my mind, I was like, shit, I would buy tickets to that faster than like Elvis and the Attractions. Like just to see the two of those guys playing together.
Jesus. Man, they've done it a bunch over the years, but I've never seen it. But Elvis just announced like 10 nights at the Gramercy Theater, which is like a 350 cap in on the east side of New York. And he's doing like 10 nights, different set list each night, and half the nights have Steve on the piano. So I bought one of each. Very expensive tickets. I was like, I asked my girlfriend, do you care about Elvis Costello? She's like, nah. And I was like, cool, I'll get, instead of two tickets to one show,
yeah,
I'll treat myself and go to one of each. This has only ever happened one other time, was Steely Dan with my ex-wife. And I was like, do you care about Steely Dan? She was like, no. And I was like, all right, I'm buying two different album shows. Let's go. Huge dork.
Man.
But anyway.
I played at the place that they played the night after they played like back in March. And
the Dan? The Steely Dan?
The Steely Dan. And the crew, like the house crew, was helping us load in. And I was like, hey, how was that Steely Dan show last night? And one of the guys goes like, those guys were so fucking weird. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, half of them had COVID. And like the horn section had COVID. They were like, fuck it, dude, you're going on stage and playing. Like they had tested positive.
Wow.
And they were like, fuck it, dude, everybody's playing. Yeah.
Of all the players to be, wow.
I know, these guys just blowing it all over the Moody Theater.
There's no masks to be worn there. Yeah,
no,
it's not,
not at all.
I hope they had plexi at least.
Yeah.
We were joking about that with our keyboard. I was like, can we just get like a big drum shield and put it around the keyboard player? Like, I mean,
at this point, yeah. I mean, I'm a total vaccine person. I'm a masker and stuff, but I am like at my breaking point with this shit. Like, how much more shit do we have to cancel? How much, you know what I mean?
That's it. Exactly. I mean, and I get it when it's a cancellation when it's somebody, you know, a singer or something, and they've got symptoms and all the stuff, but or a horn player for that matter. But
yeah,
this one,
please.
I'm like, if it was up to me,
yeah,
we just wrap them in plastic and let them do the gig. But I have to kind of defer to everybody else that's got to be in the room. So, you know, so,
can I ask you something? You referred to your ex-wife, and I'm not trying to, but is that what the document is about? That song.
Half this album is about her.
Yeah.
And about. Are, you know, about
the demise,
the aftermath.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Not the actual, well, some of it's about the actual demise, a lot of it's about just sort of looking through from the other side and being like, well, is that a great idea? But there's a few of those songs. The document is one of a couple one-sided phone calls on this record, sort of, so to speak. strangely, that song was written ages ago. I wrote the bones of that song, really, like the very good bones of that song, in the late 90s.
Really?
And just never had a place for a bossa type song in anything I was doing, and just was like, this will find its time. I'll get around to this. Just never thought too much of it. But yeah, as soon as I sent it to Pat Sansone, he was like, we're doing that song. And I was like, all right, cool. He did such nice things with it. The winds on that song just are such a nice surprise after everything that happens before it on this record.
Yeah.
Really pretty parts. And yeah. He really knew how to just not get in the way of the song. You know?
Yeah. Dude, the song Let You Down, that song, is at that chorus, I love it so much. It gives me the Jason Faulkner vibes when I listen to it.
Ah, that's always high praise.
Yeah, super high praise, right?
In addition to being one of my good buds, he's one of my favorite songwriter, musician, do-everythingers.
Yeah.
That's great, man. Yeah, it was a very basic progression, and then I threw that minor third in there, and the minor three, I should say, and it was like, ah,
yeah,
AM goal.
yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So how old are you, man?
46.
46? Okay. All right. So, because you look very young.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I set up my lighting in such a way that, no, it's jeans, it's good living, vegan, sober, all the stuff. It's
sober, taking care. Sober on purpose, or just like, never were a big party guy?
No, sober on purpose. Yeah. I never was a big party guy in what like New Yorkers call party. I've never got into like hard shit, but
right.
Yeah, I was a pretty bad drinker for a long time, but it's been a number of years. And that's the other half of this record, is like looking back and being like, well, I fixed that. Why isn't everything better? You know,
have you been able to answer that?
No, but I'll keep writing songs about it, and eventually maybe something will happen. I think I'm probably done exploring that specifically after a few of these. Disappearing Act is kind of the song on this record that is the hardest for me to revisit because of that. It's so much of just like, why didn't I, you know, do this or that? It's not the most healthy thing to relive over and over.
No,
that was the one thing about this record. As I'm finishing it, I'm like, can I play these songs live? Like, what if this song becomes really popular and people want to hear it all the time? Like, fuck. I don't have to do that. I have to go there all the time. But, you know, that's why I make the songs fun to play. At least.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about the power pop format, is that you can inject, like, you know, looking at somebody like, I've always thought that Andy Sturmer from Jellyfish always was so great at like these really disturbing and weird images in like this Twinkie music, in this musical Twinkie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you're like, what did he say? You know what I mean? Like those kind of things where.
Yeah. His lyrics are a little bizarre, and but it's all there's so much ear candy on that stuff that it you have to go through several layers before you realize, like, he's singing about some strange shit here.
Yeah, sometimes it's pretty heavy shit.
Yeah. I those Jellyfish records, man. Spilt Milk is a top five probably for me. And I have a hard time ranking, but anytime I think about it, I'm like, that's a top five record for me.
Yeah.
They're both fantastic.
I have some friends here in Austin that are all huge fans of Jellyfish, and there's like a couple of times a year, it's like an 11:30, 12 o'clock, like drunken dude text message from someone like, hey man, let's put a band together and do like Spilt Milk live. It's gonna take like 15 of us.
Yeah. I've got a similar threat.
But yours are sober.
Yeah, my friend. It's just one of those things. It's like, how much fun would that be? But we need seven guitarists to pull it off correctly, you know, and a marimba player. And like, you know, it's just, it's a lot to think about. But one of these days, it's also about finding the room that would put on something that has a pretty limited audience. I mean, people will show up, but are we going to get more than, you know, 100 people to show up we're lucky?
Like, you tell the booking person, like, look, there's going to be 15 people here, but they will all be crying.
There are going to be 15 people here, and they're all going to be playing.
Yeah. You know, man, that's the thing about this. And I remember, kind of embarking on this in this power pop band in the early 90s, knowing full well what the fate of a power pop band is. You might have a song that breaks through like Crowded House or Cheap Trick with I Want You to Want Me. And then they had several other hits that were written for them. So they're not a good example. But really, it's all Badfinger and Jellyfish and Big Star and bands you've just never heard of if you're in a mainstream place.
There's always something, you know, there's always some tragic story or just like, well, they're the greatest band on earth. It's too bad that their, you know, distributor, you know, folded the day the record came out. There's always something like that.
Right.
And I came up on the same scene. I'm pretty sure we're in the same generation here. And, you know, we would watch bands like Superdrag, you know, get a single that it did okay.
Right.
And then, you know, the next record came out, which is fucking great.
Right.
Head Trip at Every Key is so good. And it just like, you know, and then by the next album, they were just, you know, yesterday's garbage, you know, for the label. That was the major label system. But I mean, they were running the show back then. You know, every once in a while you would get a Fountains of Wayne or something like that. But, you know, right. Adam was such working on another level than most people. And a band that actually has a mega hit, you know what I mean?
But right.
You know, it's so rare. And other than that, it was like 99 out of 100, if not 99.9, you know, would just be like cutout bin from day one.
And it's weird because you have, you know, a lot of these bands put out entire records that are, I mean, like Spilt Milk, like there's not a point where you go take a piss during that record. Like it's
flawless.
It's flawless.
Solid wall to wall. And even the dumb songs are great. There's a couple like severely dumb songs on that record, but they're so good. You know what I mean?
Sabrina, Based in Plato. Yeah, that's not like...
Which is fine and playful, and it's nice to give Roger a moment. And I actually like that song. He's my best friend, is really dumb, but it's also one of the most clever things I've
I love masturbation songs. So yeah, it's one of I like it.
I remember in high school, and this is high school in the early 90s and a different time and all that stuff, but I remember like listening to that record like the weekend it came out, because we were just totally geeky for it. And my girlfriend's buddy called up and he was like, I think Andy's saying he's gay. And I was like, what? He's
so
my best friend. Listen to him. Right. And I looked at the lyrics. I was like, dude, this is about his dick.
Yeah.
It's so clearly.
Upon first listen, I thought he was gay. And then when I read along with it, I was like, oh, wow.
He's gay in a way that a lot of us are for our own. for our own junk. All right. Time to talk about something else.
So what was it? What were you at that point?
This is going to be edited for time, right?
Yeah, exactly. when you were listening to that in high school, were you were you playing already? Like, why was a kid in high school going and getting Jellyfish the day it came out?
Because I mean, I grew up, music was always the thing that kept me tethered to the planet. I was kind of a sick kid.
Wait, health wise?
You know, yeah, I had, well, no, just like I was, I killed a lot of people. No, health wise. Yeah. I had childhood cancer. I had leukemia. And then I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm happy about that. You know, things worked out. Science. Thank you to all the doctors and nurses every day. Everywhere, not getting paid enough to do some insane shit. But I just kind of like, you know, went into music wherever I could. And it was my parents' record collection. And then as soon as I could, you know, start buying stuff with my own money, I was just socking up everything I could. And there was a fair amount of, you know, commercial hard rock and stuff. And, you know, I mean, I got to, thankfully being the age I am, I got to be, you know, 11 years old when the Beastie Boys hit. So that was pretty good timing. That was like pretty formative, but, I was, you know, I was always into because I grew up on the Beatles and 70s songwriter bands and stuff like that, into like really melodic music,
me too.
You know, with guitars, you know, and so a band like Jellyfish came along, and there's so much stuff around the turn of the 90s. It's just, I mean, Michael Penn's first record came out around
Jesus.
That same time.
Yeah.
I got really into Elvis Costello's Spike, which was the first Elvis record I got.
Love
it's like all
record.
In the same, like the same fall. And it was just like this, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's where we're going.
I got some chords to learn.
Yeah. I was like, what's that? Oh, diminished.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to come in real handy in every song. Yeah, I mean, Belly Button, I wore out, but Spilt Milk, I don't know, that just goes up 1,000% from that first record. I mean, it's, some people don't like it because it's so, it's overkill in a way, but it's just like the right kind.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything, every note is useful.
So what, did you go to college? Did you?
A little bit. I spent a few years at a SUNY, a state university in upstate.
What were you doing? Were you playing in music then?
Yeah, I mean, I played in bands. I kind of did a little tangent there. I was going to say I played in bands in high school from as soon as I could. You know, I had a drum. I actually had a drum kit before I had a guitar. Is that right? No, I have that backwards. I was more into drums growing up. But in terms of like cool rock and roll instruments, I had a guitar before I had a drum kit in the house. So, which was good because I got to teach myself chords and learn how to like kind of piece together songs. And then started playing in bands, you know, 9th or 10th grade. I was playing drums in bands mostly. And our singer left because he graduated. And so I, like the senior year of high school, I just became the singer behind the drums in our band.
Oh, yeah, Don Henley.
Or Andy Sturmer, he never sat down. And I'm not even putting myself on the same cosmic plane as that dude because his shit is insane. But definitely inspirations, you know.
Yeah.
I got good at it eventually, but it wasn't until years after that band broke up. I could kind of do that now. I love in New York, I've gotten to do a lot of, you know, kind of songwriter gigs where I get, you know, where I get to sit in on drums and sing harmonies. And that's just like a fun place to be for me. But, I was definitely playing in bands, and that was an inspiration in some way toward that, in high school. And then in college, it wasn't until after like a year of college, I came back home for the summer and my friend was like, hey, this band I know is looking for a singer. Do you know anybody? And I was like jokingly like, sure, I'll do it. And I'd only written like a half dozen songs and they weren't that great. But I kind of just like went and met these guys and like jammed in their garage. And I think we played some of the more rudimentary Nirvana covers and, you know, just messed around with a couple things they had. And I was like, this could be fun. And we just kept doing it. And next thing I knew, I had a band. And here we are 28 years later.
Yeah. Trying to find a keyboard player because your keyboard player has succumbed to the pandemic.
Yeah, things have changed. You know, it was either the keyboard. Do we go with the keyboard player who just literally has an infant at home, or the guy who's got COVID? it's interesting right now. It's an interesting day.
What do you think about when people play with tracks? Because I feel like you're of the age that could have gone either way, where like that's normal. It's a normalized activity, or it's something where you're like, I didn't get into this to do that.
It depends on the thing, I think. I don't mind it when it blends into the band. You know, I don't mind it when it's like, it's just an extra element, but I can see everything that's going on and I know what the track is. And if, especially if it's something with a lot of like percussive layers or something like that, and it's like, well, it does kind of like hold the song together, you know, or if it's like something very important that is not easy to recreate with, you know, a regular size band, because I also know how expensive it is to hire musicians and stuff.
Right.
Sorry. Anyway, I was saying,
not to keep bringing them up, but my thing is, I saw Jellyfish on the Spilt Milk tour, and they didn't have any tracks. As easily,
there's that.
Yeah, where you're like, well, those fucking guys could do it. So,
yeah,
you should
I
at least be that good
that.
When you go play. You know,
that's yes. that's a great bar to set.
Yeah,
my God, that band was one of the best live bands I've ever seen. I still think about that and watch video of them all the time. They were insanely good live with a four-piece band playing that material. I try to tell people all the time, like, you have no idea how good they were. The harmonies, the vocal harmonies, holy crap.
I remember, yeah, they opened with, what's it, Heal Me, Darling, and they did
All Forgiven.
Like, the whole,
the, like, the back off, yeah.
Jesus
the
Christ.
The Roy Thomas Baker thing?
Yeah.
I mean, they were Queen-level vocals. It was,
yeah.
It blows my mind. I'm so glad I got to see that band.
Well, because
they weren't around that much.
Right. Well, so in this day and age, we live in a time when, like, touring and all that shit, you can't, like, just jump in a van with your dudes and go live. Like, at that point in my life, in that era, I did that. And I came home with money and stuff. And I played new cities. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you could do it. Now it's just so difficult that, like, I remember Jason Faulkner did a tour where he just brought, like, out his iPod and played, you know, along with his own jams and sang, which, you know, you would prefer to see him with a band, but, like, you understand you wouldn't get to see him if he didn't do it like that, because a guy like that in that position couldn't really afford to take a band on that tour.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's a shame because I've gotten to see him with a band, but
I saw him once with a trio. Yeah.
It was only a trio, which is enough when you got a guy like that playing guitar, but it's a whole different level. I've seen him both ways, but I met him through we have a mutual friend, but I met him he did a tour, him and Roger Manning,
right,
where they opened for Cheap Trick, because Cheap Trick are huge Jellyfish fans,
right.
Robin and Rick. They opened and then played in Cheap Trick. So it was like an 8-piece or a 7-piece Cheap Trick band with those guys in it. Yeah, they only did like 6 shows, and this was like 2010. Yeah, but one of them happened to be in New York, and it was a very lucky event to be able to witness that and get to hang. I don't know if there's much video. I think they did a TV taping, but I don't know if I've ever seen it. The whole thing was set up to, like, lead up to this taping that they were doing. I forget what project Cheap Trick was working on at the time, but imagine. But
oh, sorry,
that was fun to see. It was fun to see the two of them revisiting the Jellyfish material together, because that doesn't happen a lot.
No, you know? No.
Jason's kind of. Go ahead.
I hate Zoom for that reason. Like, it drives me nuts.
I try not to look at it. I try not to, like, look at the screen too much because there's a little bit of a delay, and I'm like, oh, he's talking. Oh, is he?
I had Roger on the show a couple times, and Tim Smith, who's also equally awesome. So
for the Licorice Quartet.
The Licorice Quartet, yeah. That's a cool band.
Yeah.
Tim Smith,
I think, was he in the live band for Jellyfish that tour?
He was.
He was, right, yeah.
He was. He had like a Prince Valiant haircut.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I remember they had the Light Bright, too. I loved the Light Bright.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny, man. My friends and I thought the coolest thing.
I went home and copped that shit because I had a Light Bright in my parents' basement. My band at the time was called Norman, and it fits on a Light Bright. So we just, like,
just so you know,
I still had that. There we go. It's right there.
Modern day Light Bright.
It's a new one with a little little iPhone.
They're not as cool as they used to be. I hate to say that. But
no, I miss. I love the big box, the big light box. Yeah. What is that, like LED?
I guess so. Yeah, they're stupid, man. Yeah. Light Bright. What is that?
Dream Alive.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so you had bands, and you went to college, and then did you move to New York City?
A great while later. So, I mean, there was a couple years of foundering at college, and then just kind of eventually I did a year at a SUNY school, another couple years at a different one, and none of it took. Never quite finished, you know, what was supposed to be finished, I guess. But yeah, got into, you know, doing my own rock bands in the greater Albany region, upstate. I didn't move here until 2008, I guess. Yeah, it was in 2008, early 2008. So it was a good amount of time in a bunch of different bands that I had upstate around, you know, in between there. Did my first solo record, which was my first proper record, came out in 2000 under my own name. I had a band called The Suggestions for a little while that we did an EP. There's a couple other records under my name. There was a band called Maggie Mayday that we did an EP.
That's a good name.
I like that one.
Yeah.
I like that band. It was a fun band too. Those tracks don't get enough attention. I would say if you're going to link to something from my past, go check those out. We were talking about bands. Yeah, college, blah, blah, blah.
Then you went to New York. You were talking about like your solo albums and to go back and check out these.
Wait, we got to Maggie Mayday, and then I think you froze after Maggie Mayday. Okay. I was saying that project was great. I loved that. I like listening to those songs still. After I moved to New York, I made a couple more solo records. I played drums in people's bands. And then it was about 6 or 7 years ago that I proposed doing a record with Jason. And it was around that time I started another band. I hadn't tried starting a band in a long time. And I was like, I want to do a band with a name on it that's not mine. And so Bird Streets was that first. And then as I was making the record with Jason, I was like, I think this is that. So it's just going to all be Bird Streets. That's just going to be my new thing. And that's when that came in. And we made, you know, that first record came out, 2018, so 4 years ago now.
That record's really good, man. You did that with Jason?
Yeah, it's all me and him except for two songs that were done here that we finished out there. But yeah, he's fun to work with.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. I had the pleasure of getting to hang out with him a few times, and he's such a gracious fellow, such a nice, funny, good hang.
Yeah. He's a solid dude. I love him.
Solid dude. What's kept you there in New York and kept you from moving out to LA? Because it kind of seems like your spirit people are out there.
It feels that way sometimes. I've been told since my first record came out 22 years ago, like, oh, you got kind of a Cali vibe. I remember people saying that about some of the music on that. I never tried it. I never really like even thought about it as a thing I would want to do until sometime in the last 5 or 10 years. And every time I go back now, I'm like, oh yeah, I get this. Now I get LA. I was married, and my wife was a New Yorker for life. And, she's born here. So that's, you know, that was like always just, we live here. And I love New York, and I wouldn't, you know, didn't want to leave. And my girlfriend and I now, she's also been here for, you know, 20-something years, and it's a great situation. But we talk more and more about it because she's got family out there. So we're like, maybe now's the time to think about getting out of this crazy place for a little while.
Yeah.
or longer. I mean, we've all put in our, you know, we've got our cards stamped for New York at this point. 15 years is a good run. She's been here for like 22, so... or more than that, I think. So, you know, we could do other stuff now. LA's pretty awesome, and I would love to have a shed. That's my dream, is to have the shed.
Yeah.
A little lab, because you can't see much what's in here, but this is my whole space that I do music in, really. So,
oh,
I'd love to have a place to just go and bash on the drums, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I totally get that. Here in Austin, I have a rehearsal place where shit's all set up, which is really nice.
I could do that here, but it's everything's New York. It's like, well, you get Tuesdays from 1 to 5. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's,
yeah.
It's like, and I don't have like a set schedule in any way.
$4,000 for that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, right? The share is like, you know, yeah, right. It's like $500 a month to get 4 hours. Like, is that working out like financially? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
There's not even heat. So yeah, I don't know. I've thought about that before, but I really want to have that, just to have a lab, you know. That's the goal. I've enjoyed making the last few records the way I have, and will continue to do that because I love working with other people and hearing what they bring to the music. But I also miss just being able to go out and make a song in an afternoon. Not that I can't find a way to do that at home.
Sure. I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
And I have friends here where I can go and record drums and things like that. So it's not like not doable.
It's a schlep.
It's a schlep. Exactly.
It's a schlep.
It's a schlep.
Yeah. If you ever get down to Austin, man, definitely hit me up, man. I would love to see you play live and meet you and all that stuff. This record, the first Bird Streets album is also fucking great, but this record just like, man, it blew my mind and it really tugged at my heartstrings. Like some of these songs really like, I got like,
Oh, wow.
So thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. It's nice to hear that it connects with people.
Yeah.
In that way, because it's a very personal record. I'm always, you know, I write about, you know, the stuff that's going on upstairs here, but like, this is the first record where I was like kind of consciously just writing about that and not really telling stories so much about other people. And just working through stuff kind of exclusively. And like, there's a major shift to like, I think all but two of the songs are in the first person, you know, or I kind of songs.
Yeah.
So, there's no costumes being worn here. No. So to hear that other people are finding something to connect to besides just, the music, which is nice.
The music's fucking great, but yeah.
This record sounds amazing.
Yeah, it really does.
It's that extra layer when I hear that. That's nice.
Yeah. The record will be out by the time this comes out. The record's called Lagoons. You guys, you can find John's band Bird Streets at birdstreetsmusic.com. You're going to be putting this out on vinyl, right?
Yeah.
So, get that.
Excuse me. Much like everything else in the industry there.
Fuck.
There's the delay with the vinyl, but it will be out, I believe, by the end of calendar year. And if you pre-order it, there's links on the website and on Deco Entertainment's website.
This is coming out on Sparkle Plenty Records / Deco.
Yeah, this is circle back to Michael Lockwood.
Yeah.
We cut the three songs together that felt like the end of the record. And he was like, well, I'm thinking of starting this label. I've got this guy. We're going to start a label. And I want to make Bird Streets. I got this guy. That guy is my manager now. So I got this guy too. He decided to, it was just going to be, originally it was just going to focus on like his production work. And he wanted to make Bird Streets the first single. And I was really on for that. And then he was like, I want to actually like do the record. And I was like, all right. You're saving me a lot of work here. You're saving me because we had wrapped the record and I was like, all right, now I've got to shop it. Oh God, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. I'd much rather spend your time scrambling for a keyboard player. Sorry, I keep bringing that up.
I don't want to do that either, but I keep looking down here. Thankfully, this is just going to be audio, right? So people won't see me looking at my phone going, oh, we could do it that way. it was nice to kind of have things fall together in a swift order to, okay, we're going to get this out this year rather than, shopping it for 6-8 months and then finding somebody that can put it out next summer or something, which I don't know what the difference is these days other than I'm 46, man.
Yeah.
I've got some other shit I want to get out. I'm not like on my deathbed, but like I want to like just keep moving. I don't want to be like waiting around for a record to come out,
Well, so I can't wait to hear what else you put out because this record is really, really special and it's really gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
And congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate that, man.
Well, thank you so much for doing the show, dude.
Oh, thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
Yeah, man. And good luck. Have a great show at Rockwood.
Thank you, and I hope it works out, and I hope to see you in Austin, hopefully in the spring.
Yeah, me too. Take care, John.
All right.
Bye, John.
The monster inside don't get any rest.
That's John Broder from Bird Streets, their new album, Lagoon, available now wherever you stream and download your music. Go to birdstreetsmusic.com for all of your Bird Streets needs. Get out there and check out their first record, too. It's absolutely fantastic. I want to thank John for doing the show. And hey, if you live in New York City, get out and see their record release show tonight at Rockwood Music Hall. Go to birdstreetsmusic.com to find out times and all of that stuff. All right? I want to thank John for doing this show. I had such a great time talking to him, and also Wendy for setting it up. Great, great conversation. Great band. I cannot tell you. I fucking love this record, Lagoon. Get out there and get it. Now. And hey, gang, don't forget when you're out there checking out birdstreetsmusic.com, you can find us wherever it is that you stream and download podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. New shows every Tuesday, every Friday. I've been dropping a From the Vault episode every Saturday night late. So get out there, check it out. Follow us, like us, subscribe, share. Thank you so much for listening to the show. This is the rest of the song Sleeper Agent from the album Lagoon from the band Bird Streets. Let's get down.
Is there another word for total paralysis? As soon as possible, I'm breaking out of here. I'm gonna dig my soul to freedom or die trying. Cause there's no hospital can cure me of the fear that my first move could be my last. It's lying in wait for the signal to sound. A sleeper agent with orders to cut me down. Every positive feeling underscored by a frown. At war with my mind and I keep losing ground. A congress of cowards ruling over my ears. Just a scared little kid hiding under the steps, trying not to get hit. It's getting so hard to forgive and forget when he knows what he did. As soon as possible, I'd never confessed.